Hello and welcome to Ops and Hops, the podcast for those who like beer but have to work in tech to afford it. Today I've got Scott Mabe, who loves talking about observability at Datadog. So first of all, what is up, Scott? How are you today?
Things are great, man. We wrapped up a long month of what seemed like there was an event here every other week.
Yeah.
Last I saw you, we got to hang in your town.
Chicago, yep.
With KubeCon. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. So now that you've wrapped up, what have you grabbed to drink on the show? Sounds all like right. It's about time for a good beer.
So keeping it punk rock as the big theme, I have True Believer IPA. It's American IPA, double dry hops. I grabbed it because why not? I have the whole punk rock theme in life, and it's rather hazy.
Looks like a mimosa, absolutely. But how does it taste?
It's pretty darn hoppy. It's not as bitter as I was thinking it would be.
Yeah. Today I've got the to jump in on the punk and probably brushed into metal side of things. I've actually got the Eternal Shrug here. And keep it low for my little AI background to cover that. Unfortunately, my apartment looks like crap. And this is by Fair State Brewing Cooperative out of Minnesota. So another nice Midwest, cold, upper Midwest beer for me to go along with the wonderful weather. And the ABV just so happens to be 6.66%, just to carry along the demonic vibe. So,
anyway. Close to, you know, the location of the brewery is kind of close in proximity to some of the areas that they call the beer curtain, which is like Milwaukee. When you get to Milwaukee, you're in fact beyond the beer curtain.
I have been invited to Milwaukee, hopefully within the next few weeks, to do a beer tour with a local. But to be perfectly honest, after the number of shows I've done this month, I'm not quite sure my liver can handle it. But, you know, we'll give it a shot. So, saw you at KubeCon out in actually sunny Chicago. It was pretty decent weather for November, if I remember correctly. It seems like we had like one bad day.
It was one cold night. And
yeah,
that's all right. I think that was one of the nights I just kind of wanted to go back to my room and just hang in there.
Yep.
That weird, weird hotel room where we can't control the temperature of the room because centrally controlled in the hotel. So
yeah, I can't do that. Well,
like the room was a constant 75 degrees.
Nope. 66 or bust for me. There's just no way. I need to sleep like I'm in a morgue.
Yeah, normally I do, but someone just like, keep hitting the button and come back over and you're like, what's wrong with you? And then the front desk tells you, just turn it off. How about you just take it off the wall? You're giving people this false hope that something's going to happen if I hit the button enough times.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe look it up. You might have a reset like switch or something, but I'm sure it's bypassed. But anyway, so what were you up to at KubeCon? I think I remember you spent a pretty good time at the booth. I definitely swung by a few times just to pick on you. While in some pretty deep customer conversations, if they, you know, I tried not to bug you too much, just a few weird faces when you weren't looking.
Yeah, I go pretty deep. I'm one of the more heavily requested demoers at events, and I guess the reasons.
And you're back.
So what I do at those events is run demos at the booth. And I've been lucky to be able to be one of the more requested demoers. And I guess in part, that's because I do some technical training too. I really want people to know how to use the product to the best of their ability, even if that means saving a lot of money while doing it, just to get the best possible experience from end to end out of in this example, the Datadog observability platform.
Yeah, I mean, I think if a company doesn't understand that doing things the Like, if there is a mechanism to do something cheaply or less expensive, the company's got to be okay with somebody exploiting that, or it shouldn't even be an exploitation. It's just doing something the right way, honestly.
Right. And helping people in any aspect of, like, technology realm is, like, you know, that's, it's kind of like my thing. Like, I got my Be Excellent to Each Other up here. I really dig helping people understand technology, learning more, growing, and trying to become better people. Just kind of shocked it hasn't worked on you yet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I was DevRel, we definitely found that, you know, some people don't quite understand that education should be number one. Like, people have to understand your product before it's going to matter to them. Now, I mean, the C-suite, they're not going to care at all. They just say, hey, look, I heard of this thing. Go sign up for it or make sure it works for us. But overall, I'd say getting people at the beginning of their journey, getting people, you know, somewhere in their journey where they may not understand everything, it doesn't mean that that person's not a viable customer. That actually means that that person's not only going to become a customer, but take you everywhere they go. So that's one thing I try to keep an eye on.
It's also really interesting when you mention, like, there's someone who's going to take you with you wherever you go. It's kind of how, like, the whole conference journeys work. Like, you meet, like, incredibly amazing people and form, like, in some cases, some, like, really solid friendships and bonds in the course of a week going through, like, the trenches of, like, man, that lunch was terrible. Let's go over here. Go over to the bar across the street. Or something like that. But it's an incredibly unique culture when you get to work in technology and you can get to that point of just, like, focusing on helping people and helping them understand, like, how things really work and how you can get the best possible experience out of things.
Yeah. I mean, well, rising tide lifts all ships or whatever. I know, you know, in my DevRel experience, and I know you have too, just the number of people I've met who are legitimately interested in helping you is fantastic. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work up at the top of some of these organizations. You know, we've seen some pretty big layoffs, and it seems like a lot of times DevRel and, you know, some of those people are the first on the block. It appears that what you've got going on is going on very well. And I do see some cultures that do really, really see the value, but of course, not everybody or everybody's investors necessarily see that value.
It's been a really, really bizarre year and a half. Like, when it comes down to, like, watching tech companies lay people off and watching Google go from, like, this shining great example of, like, taking such great care. Oh crap. We're going to edit that out. So it's been really interesting watching, like, companies just evolve, and, like, the way that the layoffs have happened over the course of the year and a half, it's really weird. Like, sometimes you can, like, go, oh, I see what's happening. Other times sometimes maybe it's just fueled by investors that are like, hey,
yeah.
Is there any way you can trim blah, 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 profit goes up, line goes up, that makes us happy?
Yep. Yeah. You know, I guess one of the worst things about that isn't necessarily, like, I mean, there are times where a company really does get hurt by their competition or whatever, and they have to make some tough calls. But whenever the investor says, you know, we've got a call in a month and we're actually thinking of raising money, or we're actually, you know, it's some sort of thing, like, we got to make the shareholders happy so we don't get fired. You know, like, these guys are willing to roll heads, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands of heads to protect their own job. I mean, you know, and I think that's where it starts to get kind of gross to me. I mean, all layoffs suck, but again, sometimes, like, somebody made a bad decision and everybody's going to pay for it. And that's just kind of how it goes. But when somebody makes a bad decision and then wants to cover it up by firing a bunch of people or something like that, you know, just to save their own hide, that's where it starts to suck. I mean, I think more accountability up top will be pretty nice.
Yeah, it's hard, man. Like, I'm thankful that we've had no layoffs or anything. And I just want to try to like bring everybody in.
Right, right.
You're right. Oh, let me try to find something for you. Let me help you in some way. That's just, I think it's just like, I don't want to say a character flaw, but that's just part of who I am. I just want to keep helping people.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. Some people definitely have told me to lay off after I've tried to help them so many times. I mean, they don't say it in so many words, but you know, a lot of times you can just tell they're like, nah, let me do it myself. And so I try to be a little less touchy feely sometimes when it comes to that stuff, but I do really, really care about helping people for sure.
Yeah. That's like, you know, you hit something there, which is the core part of like the scientific aspect of learning, which is the FAFO, which is to fool around and find out.
Right.
Learn things by making mistakes and at least having the ability to make a mistake to learn from.
Yeah, no, I get a lot of people who don't want to break anything. I definitely get questions, and I've actually on a couple of the other episodes, it seems like this is a common theme. We get people coming on talking about how scared people are to break stuff. It's wild. You know, maybe they need to listen to more Limp Bizkit. I don't know. Probably not. But yeah, like, you know, get in there and break stuff. The stuff isn't that expensive. If you have your billing alarm set and you set the proper guardrails and stuff like that, get in there and get weird with it.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it, right? Like, we're in similar channels of like, asynchronous communication, things like Discord or Slack, and people yep. are like, well, won't I break something by doing X or Y? Why don't you find out?
Yeah, who cares? Oops, accidentally broke an EC2 instance. Spin another one up. It's Terraform. Yeah. Who cares?
It's kind of funny. Like this week, there's an event in DC, not too far from where I live. And one of the people speaking at it was an executive for a local government agency. And part of his speaker bio mentioned that he was part of the largest cloud implementation in the federal government, which is a thing that I worked on. Mm-hmm. And as part of that, I had a fair amount of leeway to make some mistakes. I didn't delete route tables like somebody else I worked with, but that's it, because I was like, yeah, we built it out from CloudFormation, so it's all here.
Yes. Yeah.
Plug that in. But, you know, you get to do that. Like, you got a sandbox, break it. You have a thing, break it. If you have observability, break it in. See what the observability tells you. What type of data do you get?
Yeah. I mean, the phrase smoke test is a real thing, you know, actually light your stuff on fire and see what happens. Yeah. Find out, you know, of course it comes from smoke testing different materials to see how much they kill everybody in the room or whatever. But yeah, like actually get in there and get weird with it, break things, see what spits out. You might be surprised at what you learn.
It's the most important thing. Like, trying is step yeah. one. You can't do anything if you don't try first. So fool around, find out. Good old FAFO. I'm cleaning that for everyone watching. So I'm not a potty mouth today.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got beers. If you end up slipping, it's totally fine. But otherwise, yeah. You know, feel free to keep it clean. And so, you know, at KubeCon, we saw a lot of observability plays and stuff like that. Obviously, observability and AI seem to be like the two largest things going on. And of course, there are a lot of people trying to blend those together. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about AI essentially making decisions based on observability, or even creating observability or deploying these observability toys? Wow, the beer's already kicking in and I've already had about two sips.
Observability tooling. Yeah. How do I feel about AI implementing things or fixing things? I think that also kind of goes back to, do you have the leeway to perform an FAFO, that fool around to find out, like, is it going to be all right? Because I know there's a lot of products out there. Like, I was at Google Next, and they mentioned, like, we have these products that will make suggestions on how to fix code and do this stuff and, like, fix all this stuff for you. And the only way to be sure that it's going to work is to be able to try it and measure. Right?
Right.
Like, so that's great in some ways, but in another way, it's scary. Like, it's fine in a technical area where if I want to deploy a widget that does a widget thing, click a button, that's cool. That's fine. I'll let AI launch that. But if I'm going in for open heart surgery, I don't want a doctor that's like, your chat GPT. I see this thing. Is that okay?
I think my doctor might have done that.
Dear Dr. Google.
Well, hopefully it's not Gemini. If, I don't know if you saw that news.
Oh, Gemini.
Yeah, they got busted faking the video.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, come on, Google, you're so close. Yeah, they got busted faking a video, apparently. They had AI do a thing, and I'm not going to get into it because I can't remember exactly, and I don't want to make the narrative any worse than it already is. But yeah, they had it do a thing, and then I think some people kind of let it slip that part of it was staged. Basically, the old sales told people that it's fine, it works, check it out, and product told the engineers to get it figured out quick.
Yeah, those are kind of the things that I don't know. It's one of those things, right? Like when something goes down for, maybe a competitor of ours or yours or whatever, it's like, no, that still sucks. Like when something bad happens to one of us, it kind of happens to all of us. So I'm not going to be like,
I get that. But when you've actually lie about a video, I'm going to give you a little flack.
I'm going to play the political fifth.
I appreciate that.
And just be as partisan as I can.
I'm going to plead the political first and rake them over the coals if I have to.
By all means, that you can. And that's quite all right. But for the questions, like to dive deeper into some of that too, is like, how do you start to measure the performance of what's running your AI stack, right?
Right.
You get GPUs, TPUs, all that good stuff. Like, how do you start to pull data from that too? So I know that my company and others are going to really help people with that sort of aspect of it. And we're going to integrate with those language choices like LangChain, Hugging Face, which is, I don't know why they have that emoji. Not like something straight from Alien.
Oh, man, but I talked to somebody years ago who's one of the early people in it. And I'm going to attempt to get him on the show eventually. Yeah. But when he first told me about Hugging Face, I'm just sitting there. And also, this was 4 years ago. I think he was telling me this 3 or 4 years ago. And, Transformers weren't really a thing yet. And he's just sitting here telling me about how the company he works for called Hugging Face is going to do so much cool stuff, with all of this like AI stuff and everything that just at the time, like all I could think about were the worst chatbots I've ever dealt with. That's all I was thinking about. It's like, God, there's no way any type of predictive speech, all of that was just trash back then. But once, Google released that stupid paper and all of a sudden Transformers are out, all of a sudden, everything just exploded. But, are you getting just a ton of questions about it now? Has it started really hitting you or do you feel like it's kind of delayed a little bit?
A little bit. It's interesting. So from that time of the Google Next, which was, was it August? Was it the beginning or the end of August? I think it was in the end of August. That's when it really started to hit. Like people asking, like, what can you do around generative AI?
Yeah.
What do you have for generative AI? And it was hard then, like, because everything is still like pretty fresh. And we just announced like a whole bunch of stuff the early April that I don't have in my demo account, or didn't have in the demo account, so I couldn't really show it off at that point to be like, here's what we have, sir. Or, ma'am, here's what we have. But it's really crazy how fast everything has, the DevOps principle, fail fast, fail just fast, just yeah. Move it. And here we are, everything's just and now the Twitter company has launched their own
Grok
type thing.
Grok. I haven't brought myself to pay for Twitter yet. I may have to do it just to know. I'm really curious. It looks like it's powerful. I don't know if it's going to be useful, but it does look powerful. So I am pretty interested. I mean, obviously Elon had a lot to do with OpenAI for better or for worse. But you know, so he is affiliated with people who know what the hell is going on. So I wouldn't mind seeing what it's capable of.
It's kind of interesting too. When you think about it, people are likening to this whole surge of AI products as kind of the VHS versus Betamax kind of situation. Yeah. The Blu-ray versus what came against Blu-ray? I forgot.
HD DVD.
HD DVD.
Yep.
I'm sitting there going, come on, Blu-ray. You hold more data and more stuff.
Right.
But people are kind of comparing it to that in some ways. And I don't know if I see it or it's kind of a stretch for that analogy to me.
So there is a little bit of a difference. One is being the abstraction with LangChain and, oh God, what's the other one? Something llama face, whatever, whatever it is nowadays. But with LangChain and so many other like Python abstractions and things that have come out, it's getting to where these models are getting so sophisticated that you can kind of just drop them in, and what happens is you end up getting multi-model type situation where you need to solve a problem. And it says, actually this model is better for this, or this model is better for this or whatever. And it can determine based on the question. So you're actually using an LLM to analyze your question. Once it analyzes the question, it then decides which other LLM to go to and use that. And you can end up chaining this out pretty much ad nauseum. It's really crazy. And I think that's where a lot of people are starting to look with the observability stuff is, how do you find out which of these models is doing well? And I know there are a lot of companies that do provide benchmarking and stuff like that. I certainly would not ask you to volunteer any information on whether Datadog's heading in that direction, since I don't know that you'd be able to speak to it. But that would be interesting.
Yeah, we do have at least one product that is pretty AI-focused and prompt-focused, which is called Bits AI. It's marketed as a DevOps co-pilot, so that's kind of interesting. You can ask it to get aspects of application health or things like that. One of the things I do at conferences, I try to ask it as many silly questions as I can when no one's at the booth getting a demo, so that way people can be what are you doing over there? Even if it's people I work with, that way we can just keep the conversations rolling about what our platform can do.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at it here. It is clearly released in August. Looks pretty solid, but this is, again, AI related for DevOps, stuff like that. I would be interested to see, I'll probably play with it at some point, whether you can give it feedback. So if it gives you an answer, you need to be able to say that answer was trash, or that answer bricked production, or that was great. You got the intern through the forest. Good job.
Yeah, there's usually a thumbs up or a thumbs down button to be able to, that feedback was good, that feedback was bad.
Oh, nice. Nice. Anything else you saw, while talking to people and hanging around, and because I know we went to several happy hours. We did a lot going on. We had a lot going on for sure. Did you see any other trends that I may have missed?
We crashed that one happy hour too, which is kind of interesting.
That one.
Well,
We did crash a happy hour, yes.
We didn't even sign up, so they don't even know who we are, technically. We were at the bar, and then the happy hour happened, and we were just in the middle of it. And
I mean, let's be honest. Any hour that we're together is happy.
No, that was Reggie's. That was
Reggie's was good. So for those who don't know Chicago, Reggie's Rock Bar is a really, really, really great punk and rock and metal oriented bar. If you need to take a breather when you're at a conference at McCormick and listen to something that isn't poppy or stupid, or talk to your coworkers, head to Reggie's.
However, do not drink Malort.
Oh, come on. I almost wore my Malort shirt, actually. Malort's so good. I mean, it's full of grapefruit and everything that the body needs to grow strong and healthy. And it prevents scurvy.
No, thanks.
Scott's just thinking about the Party Rock app I did that created drinks based on only Malort. So you could ask it for anything, and it just mixes it with Malort, no matter what you say. So I thought that was an example of using AI for evil.
Yeah. Terrible. Malort is not good. Think about the worst experience of your life, and then try a sip of Malort. It'll be right up there with it.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But other things that we got to see there, there's lots of startups around AI. Well, everybody wants to help you do something with AI.
Yep.
Either in observability, just being able to run your platform. There's a lot of really cool things happening in the open source world. One thing in our prep call that we talked about a little bit about Crossplane has always been, that's been a project that I've been really interested in over the years.
I know that
you did a lot of inference code with Terraform, and those things are near and dear to my heart, being like the old ops guy, as it were.
Yeah, Crossplane is a tough one for me. I like it overall, and I have not used it much, but I do like it overall, like the idea of it. But I think for your small, scrappy startup, it's going to become a headache. As in, if you need to go and make a change, and God, as much as I hate to admit it, drift is important. Drift happens. You're going to need to actually go and change something on a whim. You're going to need to make a change to get somebody in at the middle of the night to solve a problem. You're going to have to do something. Drift is going to happen. And Crossplane does have the ability to enable drift, basically stop watching. But it just sounds like there's a lot of moving pieces there that just kind of, I could be completely wrong, and I'm sure somebody will rip me to shreds on this, but it just seems like there are too many moving pieces for your small, medium business type stuff to make it really useful without giving somebody a headache. But again, I could be wrong, and I'd love somebody to prove me different on that. But otherwise, I think, I've heard people say that it's going to replace Terraform. I don't think it is. At least it will put a dent in Terraform, but I don't think it's going to replace it. I think
2015, 2016 of why should we use Terraform and not CloudFormation?
Oh, God.
That thing. But like back then, CloudFormation was totally different. You didn't even have the ability to work with YAML
right
at that time. So that was like going way, way back over the whole life cycle of things. So working with a JSON file, not as easy when it gets too long.
Nope. Me and brackets do not get along.
And at least now we can break it up into chunks and do all that good stuff, modules and all that goodness that, I tried to espouse for back then, but it wasn't FedRAMP approved. Being in DC area, a lot of federal government contracting becomes part of your blood. So yeah, it's a whole thing. I look at products like Crossplane and OPA as being some of my early top favorites of things in the open source world. Being able to control access and provision and do all that goodness.
My time at Spacelift, we did a lot of work with OPA. And I will say that although I got fairly comfortable with the language, I still hated it. And, well, as much as I hate to say it, ChatGPT does a pretty good job of scaffolding it for you. Now, don't get me wrong. Something as important as OPA, do not just throw that over the fence. You will end up having an incident. Yeah, exactly. but getting you started, I think it works pretty well. So given with, I don't remember the name of the service now, but Amazon now has, for those of you who remember, we used to have the console recorder that people would use, and it would actually record your motions within the AWS console, and it would output CloudFormation for that. Now, AWS, I believe it's in preview right now. I don't think they've actually released it wide yet, but AWS has included that ability within the console now. And they'll output it as, I'm not sure, I'm trying to remember. I think it was Boto or Java. I don't remember if they have it in CloudFormation yet. I don't know if they have it in Terraform yet. I don't remember exactly where they're going with it. I apologize. I promise I'll research it. But with stuff like that coming so fast, thanks to LLMs and all of that, how long do you think Crossplane, Terraform, IAC in general has, at least in its current iteration?
It's going to depend on the use case. So it kind of almost reminds me when people ask me what makes my product better than other people's product. Like, depends what you need. Depends what you're going to use. The culture, the people running the thing. It's really going to come down to really that. And I'm a firm believer that you should allow your teams to choose their own tools.
That makes sense. Do you think that, AI might actually remove a lot of that? Obviously, my life as a Terraform trainer is going to change pretty drastically over the next several years as ChatGPT just spits out, Terraform code. Obviously, it's old, but if your company figures out how to scrape the docs, which isn't really hard to do, and writes a ChatGPT on the updated docs along with everything else, you're looking at, having to learn any syntax at all in the next 5 years is probably going to start to go away. What do you think about that?
I guess we'll see. This reminds me of something, not to deflect, but like seeing the rise of job postings for not prompt engineering, but it's almost like conversational engineering. Like, people to work with the models to get favorable outputs.
Right.
So there's going to be that, but I don't know. It's going to be hard to tell because we mentioned before, and we've had this talk before about, when a company wants to do something different, are they going to rip out like all that old Terraform that they have and just go something new?
Right.
Somebody's
going to need to manage it.
Yeah.
People are still going to need to know it. But, at the end of the day, it's almost like people are going to start just feeding everything they've got with their company and, basically just training models on all of their stuff, which, of course, is going to come with its own problems.
Are we going to have AI do pull requests and code checks?
I think they're already doing that.
I know
they have ChatGPT writing the pull request notes. I know they have that.
And one of my favorite things, and I know you posted about this in the past on your LinkedIn, was the Git hooks. Make sure that you don't have any secrets in there. But I know that we can have a whole scan of the code that you're trying to push just to make sure that you're not injecting any secrets or things that shouldn't be there based upon syntax. But I still think that there's going to have to be a pull request and some type of a level of a check before you even think about deploying anything from that's been written by.
I hope so. Yeah. I've definitely seen some broken code. I do use ChatGPT a good bit just to kick out the occasional script, just because I don't feel like looking up the provider. but I always take it as a starter point and never as a final. I don't think I've ever applied anything directly from ChatGPT. I've always made changes. So we've still got a little bit of time to figure that out for sure, but I think that's definitely something to think about.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, I just will always err on the side of safety. Review that.
Yeah, absolutely. And use your observability tools.
Use version tags. So that way you know like what version is running versus about to be included.
Right.
I could
We could do an entire like 2-hour episode on just not breaking Git and doing right things with that for sure. Deploys. So what have you been up to outside of tech? Can take breather off of that.
So like I said, November was a really busy month. So early in the month, I went to Orange County, California for Punk in the Park. So I was there like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Flew out of there Monday morning to go to Chicago for KubeCon. Heading back to Orange County, California on the 4th of January to go to see some shows by TSOL, the punk band. TLDR, Derek. A lot of punk rock shows on the West
Coast. Yeah, what is your ratio, do you think, punk rock shows to conferences?
Happy Scott would say more punk rock shows than conferences, but it's almost even at this point. I did that conference earlier on. All right. No, I did the Punk Fest at the beginning of the month, then did KubeCon, had some time, customer visit in the mix, and then reInvent.
Yeah.
So it's usually more tech focused, but when I see a good punk show, I can't pass it up. And when
that's not the worst mix of things I've ever heard, that's for sure. I know I just bought Bad Religion tickets coming up and Social Distortion, which, to be honest, I'm a little more excited about Bad Religion. Social Distortion's good, but Bad Religion just kind of takes it to another level, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, you know, with Social Distortion, you're going to get 101 people with this hat in the audience.
Oh, you're right. Oh, a bunch of nerds.
Yeah. Bunch of scaly cap wearing.
Oh, they're insufferable.
Talking about, you know, I saw them at the Cubby Bear when there was only like 32 people.
Oh, yep. There it is. Who else was there? I'm trying to think. I think it was Green Day. Maybe had some big like things at the Cubby Bear or something. There's been several artists that have gone to the Cubby Bear. I'm not sure they've gotten anybody that's become anything lately other than a bunch of finance bros that get a little too silly after a Cubs game lately. But, you know, maybe one day they'll get the old spirit back.
Show up in your Patagonia.
Hey, shut up. I do have a Patagonia, but that's only because my friend gave me a 40% off coupon.
Your sleeveless Patagonia vest.
Oh, I don't have the vest. I couldn't do it. I had the option. I could not do the vest. I do have the jacket because it is very solid, and I am in Chicago. So I'm going to get what allows me to walk outside without dying, but the vest, not going to happen.
Have you considered a bubble?
Like, I mean, I did in 2020, but I don't think I'm going to bother with it here.
Hamster wheel or hamster ball kind of situation. Like, just.
Have you tried to get a hamster ball across the ice? It does not work out well.
No, it doesn't. But I've also seen how people drive around there, which also could potentially help.
Oh, my God. Yeah. One of the biggest ways to rob stores is to actually run cars through the building. So that's always fun. Yep.
That's a little bit out of my league.
Yep. We won't dive too much into that. But yeah, it's been quite the year, I think, for everybody. But overall, I mean, you know, you've got a 50-50 punk rock tech conference situation going on. I am actually looking at booking KubeCon Paris. Have you heard anything on that? Do you think you might get lucky, or you got a team over there?
We have a team in the area, which includes somebody in Spain. One of our experts on Kubernetes is in Spain, so pretty sure that's going to be the way it pans out. And we have a great team in EMEA, which is...
It makes sense, yeah.
Why not have the locals go and do their thing?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I'll probably... I may attempt it. I've got to check the stupid flights, but... And I can't go over there just to go to Paris, to be honest. I've got to go to several other places, looking at London and Brussels and Amsterdam and thinking about bouncing around a little bit, trying to make up for some lost time, you know. And I've got a lot of CNCF friends who are going to be hanging out, so should be pretty cool.
So Disneyland Paris, you know, you can just
I'm good.
Do the scary thing.
Yeah, I think I'm good on that. But man, Scott, it is it has been an absolute pleasure as always. We definitely need to get a panel going at some point with some of our old virtual happy hour friends, see what we can fire up together. I think that'll be a lot of fun. We'll go a little more no holds barred.
Gonna keep it PG and
I've got restricted set on the YouTube. Everything says this is not for all audiences, so if they walk into the room, that's their problem. I think we'll be okay. Anything you've got to drop on the audience?
So what to drop on the audience? I'm sorry.
Anything else you've got other than?
No, I think I hit all my core philosophies. Fool around, find out, be excellent to each other.
Yep.
Try. Step one is always try. And then bug Derek.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, no, this has been a blast.
How would you prefer people to get in touch with you if they've got any questions on this or want some mentorship or need their observability checked or whatever?
Reach out on the LinkedIn and I'll do whatever I can.
I will be sure to share that data.
Cool, man. Great.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate it. And one more cheers for the audience. And let me get it where the camera can see it. There we go. Cheers.